Lake Effect continues now on 89.7 WUWM. I'm Bonnie North.
And I'm Audrey Nowakowski. The expectations for the Milwaukee Bucks are high this year, and the team has generally lived up to them, getting off to a fast start in their brand new arena, the Pfizer Forum. Longtime fans know that things don't always work out, but more recent fans might not be as familiar with some of the up and down half-century history of the basketball team that calls Milwaukee home.
Sports writer Eric Name hopes that his new book does something about that. Name, who covers the Bucks for the website The Athletic, is the author of 100 Things Bucks Fans Should Know and Do Before They Die, and he joined Lake Effect's Mitch Tyke in the studio recently to talk about where his own Milwaukee basketball knowledge began.
Let's see. I've been here in Milwaukee for the last 4 years, 2 years before that, and then I guess technically you could say my entire life, because I am from Slinger, Wisconsin, just a little ways up here from Milwaukee, so kind of born and bred Wisconsinite.
So what are your earliest memories of this team? How much of the stuff that's in this book is like stuff that you remember from being a Bucks fan, and how much did you really have to go back and research?
Well, I mean, I was born in 90, so I would say around 95, 96 is when you can start kind of putting memories together. Not very vivid memories, but for me, the most vivid memories really started in the 2000-2001 season, the Big Three, when they make their Eastern Conference Finals run. From that point forward, I feel pretty confident with, you know, like how my brain was kind of processing things. And, you know, sometimes your memory is a little bit skewed, a little bit rosy-colored glasses. So I had to, you know, rewrite some chapters after I did a little bit of fact-checking. But at least you
had stuff that you could go back and
correct.
Check. It wasn't like you had to, you know, like the stuff that happened in the early 70s is all stuff you would have had to go back to.
Yeah, absolutely. And to me, that was kind of some of the fun of this, was like, okay, let's go check out the Journal Sentinel archive page. And, oh yeah, it used to be the Journal and the Sentinel. There was two newspapers.
Right.
Let's see which one I should check, which writer was at this game. Well, how were their accounts different? Like, for me, it was kind of this fun sort of research project where you were kind of digging back in and trying to find all this stuff that, you know, like, I know Kareem Abdul-Jabbar was a great basketball player, but I didn't know any of the details. So every single story I was writing, it was kind of hopping back in, learning a little bit more, doing a little bit more research. And it ended up just kind of, hopefully, I know for me, filling in all of the blanks that I had. Like, I know kind of the players that are retired and things like that, but filling in all those blanks was really a lot of fun.
So in the end, was 100 things a tough number either to reach or to limit yourself to?
Ooh, I think there were days when I certainly thought 100 was too many and I had to try to find a way to get there. But then I think in the end, I got pretty comfortable with everything that was there. We cut a couple chapters that just didn't quite fit or didn't have enough source material. Like, because obviously you want it to be well-researched and you want it to be interesting and you want it to be accurate. So I really wanted to write a chapter in a 2002 game. Sam Cassell punted a basketball. And as a kid, I thought it was the coolest thing. I definitely went to practice the next day on my middle school team and punted a basketball. My coach was not happy about it, but we all thought it was the coolest thing. Unfortunately, I couldn't find enough accounts. I couldn't find enough people that wanted to talk about it. I talked to Sam about it. And he was like, actually, I got to go do something real quick. So, like, he didn't want to rehash it, but I think in the end, I'm very comfortable with all of them, and I think 100 is about the right number.
Well, so let's go all the way back. I mean, I am not from Milwaukee, but I think I have heard, like, the Brewers' origin story a million
sure.
times since I moved here 12 years ago, and the early days of the Packers are fairly well known. But the start of the Bucks is another story. For people who don't know it, can you talk about what brought them into being in, like, 1967, 68?
Well, it's just an insane story, and it's a perfectly Wisconsin story
yeah.
because they are here because of Vince Lombardi, and not because Vince Lombardi was ever a basketball coach, not because he ever had any interest in basketball, but because Mr. Fishman was trying to go up to Green Bay and say, hey, I want to have this basketball team. I want to do it in Milwaukee. And at the time,
he originally wanted a football team, right?
So he wanted a football team, and Vince Lombardi was not going to let that happen. At the time, the Packers were playing some of their games in Milwaukee, so it was just not going to be. So he came in, they got it all figured out and said, No, you don't get to have a football team. This is a Green Bay Packers town. Even though it's Milwaukee and not Green Bay, this is a Green Bay Packers town. This is our state. So, no, you cannot have a football team. And from there, he wanted to bring professional sports to Milwaukee, so he tried to find a way to make it happen. And lo and behold, he fell into the idea of a basketball team, found out that the commissioner was in Chicago, drives down to a lunch, just jumps in and says, hey, I want to put a basketball team in Milwaukee. Tell me everything I need to know to do that. And here we are.
And then, yeah, he got another investor like the next week. And then, yeah, like 3 weeks after he dreams up the idea of having a basketball team, the NBA awards Milwaukee a basketball team.
Yeah, he finds Wes Pavilon, and Wes Pavilon's like, yep, I'm self-made. I'm from Chicago. I love basketball. I played it as a kid. Yeah, let's do a basketball team. And yeah, like you said, 3 weeks. It's just an insane story. But like I said, it's a perfectly Wisconsin story because somehow Vince Lombardi is involved in it.
Well, and the funny thing about it is, you know, when you think about the two names here, we're talking about Marvin Fishman and Wes Pavilon. These are not names that anybody ever talks about in Milwaukee anymore.
No, like these are not guys that, and I mean, I think it makes a lot of sense. Like Herb Cole was so synonymous with the team for so long, obviously was a part of getting the new owners involved, but
there are probably people who think that Herb Cole was the original
owner. I would
think
so. I would absolutely think so. And the even funnier part about that was he was actually trying to do that as well. He was trying to think of a way to get a professional basketball team here as well, and then he found out that Marvin Fishman wanted to do it, that Wes Pavilon, that they were ready to go and do it, and he said, okay, that sounds good. I think they'll do well with that. And
right, he was kind of busy, actually.
Yeah,
right?
He was like, I got other stuff to do. Fine, you guys can do it. It's going to be great. Milwaukee have a basketball team, and then 20 years later, sure enough, he buys it.
Interestingly, in this book, you have Herb Cole's purchase of the Bucks ranking more highly than the original founding of the Bucks.
I guess it's always kind of been this interesting push-pull relationship in Milwaukee is that, you know, so many times they've had an arena, they've then outaged that arena, and then they've had to find a way, hey, Milwaukee's too small of a town. They can't handle a professional basketball team. We're going to move it somewhere else. And every time you've needed someone to come through and say, no, you know what, we're going to keep them here. And that was exactly kind of what Herb Cole did when he bought the team, was that he said, we have to stay here. We have to find a way to keep the Bucks in Milwaukee. He does it, gets some help from the Pettit family, who a day after he buys the team are like, we'll pay for the arena. And he's like, well, it's going to be this. No, we'll pay for it. It's fine. Okay, sure. Sounds great. Thank you.
Well, and it's funny because, you know, for a team, they've only won one championship.
Yep.
They've been to two NBA finals. And somehow, despite only having that kind of limited, you know, success in the end, they've kind of led a charmed life over these 50 years.
Yeah, just all of the ways you can kind of think of a team finding a way to stick around. Like, just that, you know, at the time, the Pettit family happened to be getting into more charity work and finding a way to support local entities. Like, it was the same time that they helped build Bradley Tech High School. Like, all of these different things are going on, and it just so happens that it was at the perfect time to keep the Bucks in town. And you think about, even at the start of the franchise, when they started in 69, they won a coin toss to get Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. That's what led to their two finals appearances. If you're an NBA team that just got started in the first 10 years, you don't have a ton of success, you know, maybe you disappear. Like that's happened to cities all over the place. You think of Seattle, Kansas City, Cincinnati. All these teams have had teams that have left, and largely it was because, you know, they weren't having enough success. So there's just so many things throughout all of this that, yeah, they haven't had the most success of any franchise. Obviously, like you said, just one championship in 71. But throughout all this time, there's just been just enough that has kept the team here. And I do think that has led to Bucks fans being incredibly passionate because they do feel like, hey, my investment in this team actually matters because people in Wisconsin have invested that same thing and kept this team here.
You mentioned Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. Obviously, when the Bucks drafted him, he was still Lou Alcindor.
Yeah.
But reading this, I will confess, I hadn't realized what an enormous, you know, you think about the impact that a superstar player has. He completely turned around the fortunes of this team from, you know, the year before to the year and the next year he was on the team.
Yeah, and you just think about the team that they had beforehand. You do an expansion draft. That means obviously teams are going to leave off their probably least desirable players, guys that, you know what, if you take them, fine, you take them. So this is a ragtag group of veterans that really doesn't have a whole lot. You know, you make a couple draft picks and you hope those work out, but, you know, you're just kind of hoping for the best that, you know, maybe you get lucky on a guy that was injured and shouldn't have been on that list, and instead you get to grab him. And then everyone in the world, in the basketball world, knew that Lou Alcindor would totally change a franchise. Everyone knew it. And it comes down to the luck of a coin toss and a crazy phone call where the Phoenix guys are on one line, the Bucks guys are on another, and then you have Marvin Fishman getting burned by a cigarette that was in Wes Pavlon's mouth as they managed to win the coin toss. And it totally changes everything. And obviously the NBA is a superstar-driven league. That still remains true today. But in that moment, that was the superstar of superstars. No one had ever seen someone like Lou Alcindor before. And it just totally changed everything that this Bucks franchise had going.
So we're gonna have to flash way forward because we're not gonna be able to talk about all 100 things here. But I want to ask you about a couple of coaches who have been important to the Bucks over the years: Don Nelson and George Karl.
I mean, it's so strange to think about all of the things that we hear about modern basketball. Everyone's talking about, you know, shooting more threes, small ball lineups, using a guy like Giannis Antetokounmpo, who's 7 feet tall, he's very long and lengthy and athletic, using him as a point guard. Oh my gosh, these novel ideas that no one's ever thought of before. Don Nelson did all of those things, literally all of them. Nelly Ball was, you know, you're going to have some small ball lineups. We're going to use a power forward. We're going to try these interesting things defensively, offensively. And he's just this huge innovator. And it's heartbreaking that Bucks team never got a championship because I don't know if he ever got his proper due until the 2000s when all of a sudden he was coaching another team in Dallas that's shooting a bunch of threes and playing small ball and doing exciting, innovative things. And it's just a shame that he never kind of got that due in Milwaukee. But it was just fascinating to read through his time with the Bucks and everything that he had done. And hopefully I was able to impart a little bit of that. And then George Karl is also another guy who I think gets known from a lot of different things. A defensive coach who loves defense, always wants to play hard defense, and then somehow he coaches the very best offense in the league in the 2000-2001 Bucks, and they're shooting a bunch of threes, and he's inventing new plays, and everyone's just like, oh, okay, I guess he can coach offense too. But yeah, both those guys, when you think of the most important teams of the Bucks since those early on championship teams, you're looking at the 80s Bucks with Don Nelson and then 2000 Bucks with George Karl.
So as we look at today, it's interesting because I forget exactly what number drafting Giannis shows up as in this book. It could easily be, if things go right for the Bucks, the number where Giannis clocks in could jump a lot higher in any subsequent editions of this book.
Yeah, I've been thinking about that second edition, and one person, one of my friends that read the book, was like, "You need more Giannis," and I was like, "Well, I can't do
he's
it."
He's on the back cover, for God's sake.
I mean, he's on the cover. Like, I can't do it.
The front.
Like, I can't do it quite yet because you think through some of the great players that the Bucks have had. Sidney Moncrief had 5 straight years of all NBA basketball. All defensive basketball. He was a great player, and then he had a bunch of knee injuries and everything went poorly for him. So at the moment, it's like, did I push Giannis quite hard enough? And I like you said, I think the subsequent additions are going to push him up quite a bit higher, but he is off to a start of an NBA career that few people in the franchise can even come close to matching. And if that continues for a while, if he does eventually end up staying in Milwaukee, yeah, those numbers for Giannis are going to move a little bit higher on the list.
All right, so I have to ask about one other thing. Reading the chapters towards the end, you get to things that I really had no clue about. Number 97 on this list, because the actual title of the book is 97 Things to Know and Do. Under the do category, listening to a song called Green and Growing. What in the world was that?
Green and Growing was the song that the Bucks ended up using in their television broadcast. So they have famous radio guy Eddie Doucette moves over to TV. They're trying to figure out how to spice up their broadcast. And oh, by the way, you just lost Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. He's not on the team anymore. So who are these guys? And essentially, they decided that this Bucks team is green because they're young, and they're growing because they're young as well. This young team, it's green and growing. We need a snazzy disco beat. Sure enough, there is Green and Growing, all ready to go. It would bump back on every telecast. So you go to commercial, come back, there's Green and Growing, you're all ready to go. And it's kind of strange. It's taken on a life of its own because the current DJ for the Bucks, DJ O, has found a way to mix that in with a current hip-hop beat, and he just mashes it up. And there's a lot of times after games where, if the Bucks win, there's the new mix of Green and Growing with a little bit of flair from the current day. And it's just a strange song that, you know, somehow I've heard for years and years and years, because it doesn't matter if it was a radio show, if it was the Bucks themselves, like, the song has just stuck around. And I have to say, because you mentioned it, it's going to be in my head the rest of the afternoon.
I was going to ask if it is your ringtone.
It is not my ringtone for that reason, because then it would be in my head all the time.
Eric Nahm, thank you so much. Great book.
Thank you for having me.
Eric Nahm covers basketball and the Milwaukee Bucks, in particular for the sports website The Athletic. His new book is called 100 Things Bucks Fans Should Know and Do Before They Die. He spoke with Lake Effect's Mitch Tyke.